Honor thy father and thy mother. Let's first take a look at the sins of children towards their parents. Disobedience and disrespect will almost always be venial sins. There are three cases where it can become mortal. The first case is grave disobedience, and the typical example for this would be a teenager who sneaks out of the house to go on a date without the parents' permission. The reason why this is considered grave matter is because the parents have the duty and the right to know where and with whom their children are. Second case of grave matter is a case of grave dishonor to the parents. Typical example is a teenager who slaps a parent in the face. Third case is grave grief given to one's parents through one's immoral behavior. These are the three cases where it can become grave matter. Other than that, though, it's almost always going to be venial sin. Let's also take a look at sins of parents towards their children. If you neglect the baptism, confirmation, or Catholic education of a child, that would be grave matter. Even if you neglect to explain the facts of life, suitable to the age, obviously, so that means it's going to be incremental as a child ages, this can easily be grave matter. So, dear parents, do make sure you're careful about that. The old saying was better a year too early than a day too late, and this is very true. What about failing to correct the faults of one's children? And here we're only speaking about minors, so under the age of 18. You want to avoid two extremes. On the one hand, you want to avoid jumping down their throats for every little thing that only discourages a child. On the other hand, you want to avoid letting them get away with murder too. So the key here is that moderation, obviously. So you must correct habitual faults. If there's something mortal, you have to correct it. But usually it's going to be venial things. So if you find that a child has a habitual fault of lying, cheating, petty theft, bad language, whatever, yet you do want to correct any bad habits before they're actually formed. Parents also have a responsibility for their children if you can prevent their sins. So in other words, you want to be careful, especially about occasions of sin in the house, especially with regards to the media. If you've got, who uses the TV nowadays? It's so obsolete, honestly. Everything's on the phone. So internet blockers, if your child has a phone, Do they really need to have a phone before they're 18? That's another question right there. But if you have a minor child who's got a phone with the internet on it, it definitely must have an internet blocker, dear parents. Also, parents, you want to be careful about dating rules for your teenagers. A young man normally, because dating is meant as a preparation to receive the sacrament of matrimony, there has to be a sufficient reason for this because of the occasion of sin involved. So that's why a young man normally should not begin dating until he's able to support a wife and family. So if he's going into a profession, you're going to college, yeah, maybe age 21. If he's going into a trade right out of high school, maybe when he's 18, if he's able to support a family at that point. Young ladies simply need to be emotionally capable of motherhood. I think most of our girls do have that by the age of the time they're age 18. Not that I would suggest that they go running after Joe Sixpack at age 18, obviously. So that's why, dear parents, make sure that the children are being prudent about this. This is important because of the occasion of sin involved in dating. So the children obviously are social beings. They should be encouraged to be with others their own age. Ideally, boys with boys, girls with girls. If there is anything mixed, it really, ideally, should be in a group setting. There should not be any pairing off until they are actually really able to think about marrying. That brings us to the fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill. The principle here is that God is the author of life, and only he has sovereign rights over its use. That's why birth control, abortion, sterilization, in vitro fertilization, and euthanasia, or cooperation in any of these sins, will be mortal by its very nature. Moreover, with the sin of abortion, there is also an excommunication attached, not only to the one who has the abortion herself, but to anyone who cooperates in procuring an abortion. With the sin of sterilization, because this is also a sin of injustice against one's spouse, there is actually a grave obligation to have the sterilization reversed if it is still possible. Sometimes there are circumstances which prevent the reversal, and if you're ever in doubt about this, simply speak to a priest. With regards to the sin of euthanasia, we can mention the means of preserving life. There are ordinary means of preserving life, which must always be taken, and extraordinary means of preserving life, which are not obligatory, but only optional. Now, while the principles in themselves are very black and white, the application of these principles to an individual case, there's a lot of gray area there. So that means that if you are taking care of a loved one in their last months, it's always prudent to speak to a priest to make sure that you're handling everything according to God's law. There is another principle concerning the fifth commandment, and this governs the use of alcohol and drugs. Here's the principle: that God has given to mankind the use of reason. That means we know the difference between right and wrong, and therefore we do not have the right to deprive ourselves deliberately of the use of reason without a very grave motive. Let's give an example where it is okay. Let's say that you're going into the hospital to have an operation. Of course, you take the anesthesia to knock you out. That's a sufficient reason. But no matter what your spouse is like, no matter what your kids are like, no matter what your boss is like, you're not allowed to get tipsy or drunk. So let's take a look at this. The relaxed feeling that comes from alcohol in moderation, and that's the key word here is moderation, is okay because you still have the use of your reason, and that's fine. The reason that God has given us alcohol is that by relaxing our mind and body, we are better able to serve God and better able to carry our cross. That's the reason, not because it tastes good or because we enjoy our friends, etc. Now, tipsiness is when you still know the difference between right or wrong, but it's beginning to get fuzzy. That's a venial sin, and that's what we need to avoid. Now, actual drunkenness, you know, drop down drunk, person doesn't even remember what happened. That's clear that the use of reason was lost, and yes, that would be grave matter. Likewise, drug abuse with drugs that warp the mind, obviously offensive to God. When you have to confess sins of drunkenness or drug abuse, you also want to mention in confession how many persons were scandalized and how many persons were present, and also did you share the drug with anyone? So how many persons did you affect that way? And also, like, did people see you passed out from the alcohol? You know, you want to mention that also, to tell Jesus you're sorry for sins of scandal. Now, considering tobacco products, smoking cigarettes, etc., normally this is not going to be sinful. However, if there is a family history of lung disease, it could, in my opinion, it could become a sin of imprudence. Gluttony will almost always be venially sinful. The only time when it would become mortal is if one deliberately provokes vomiting, especially if it happens frequently, because doctors say that can do a lot of damage to the esophagus. The occasions of sin. are a person, place, or thing that more often than not leads you to offend God mortally. There is a grave obligation for us to avoid what are called the unnecessary, proximate occasions of mortal sin. So back in the old days, it used to be TV. As I say, who uses TV nowadays? Nowadays, it is the internet, and that's why blockers and filters are important. For young adults, especially, bad companions can lead one away from the faith. For those who are inclined towards alcoholism, walking into a bar can be an occasion of sin. Now, it is true that the occasions of sin do differ from person to person, largely on account of one's age, one's sex, etc. And that's why what is important is that each one of us knows what is an occasion of sin for us, and that we avoid those occasions of sin, and that we don't judge others who have perhaps different occasions of sin than ourselves. Anger will normally be a venial sin only in the case where it becomes really violent. For example, two guys having a punch-em-up, trying to break each other's bones. In that case, it could become mortal. With regards to the sin of hatred, theologically speaking, hating someone means I want this person to burn in hell forever, which would, of course, be a mortal sin against fraternal charity. Usually, however, when someone says, I hate so-and-so, they don't actually mean it in the theological sense. They mean sort of, I really dislike his guts, which is why normally this is going to be venially sinful at the most. And if the hatred is not against the person but towards their bad behavior, well, that's legitimate because we have to hate sin. So if we say, yeah, I hate politicians, meaning we hate what politicians do, oh yeah, that's an act of virtue. Abuse, whether physical, emotional, sexual, whatever, is always sinful. That brings us to the sixth and ninth commandments. Thou shalt not commit adultery, and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Here I'll try to be very discreet. However, the underlying principle is essential to understand, that God has given to mankind the reproductive power, not primarily for our own personal satisfaction, but primarily for the continuation of the human race. That's why any sin against the sixth and ninth commandments, by its nature, will be offensive to God because of the disorder from God's plan. This is also why parents must educate your children. Again, it's going to be incremental as a child ages, so the child can, two things, one, avoid sin, secondly, practice Christian virtue. That's so important. Let's briefly take a look at some of the states of life. Those who are civilly divorced are forbidden to date because they are still married in God's eyes. Those who are allowed to date must avoid the unnecessary occasions of sin. For example, dating couples must avoid being alone in private for a long time. They must also avoid prolonged signs of affection. Please remember that passionate kissing outside of marriage is a mortal sin. Shacking up, obviously, before marriage, is obviously a mortal sin. For married couples, please remember that the marriage debt is a grave obligation. To deny the marriage debt would ordinarily be a mortal sin, although there are certain exceptions. Also, a mere deferral of the debt is specifically different from an actual outright denial. So a mere deferral is where you both agree to delay it a day or whatever, and as long as neither of you is put into an occasion of sin because of this, this can be allowed. Concerning NFP, or what is called rhythm, it is prudent, though not obligatory, to speak to your confessor first to make sure that you have a sufficient reason for using it. Please remember that temptations are not sins. You can, of course, mention in confession that you've been tempted, but tell the priest that you tried to fight them off, otherwise he will think that you consented to them. Desires are different from thoughts and therefore should ideally be confessed separately. Regarding the object of a thought or desire, the priest will always assume a person of the opposite sex. If not, it must be confessed because that is part of the species of the sin. Concerning looks, oftentimes a first look will be involuntary. You're walking down the street and you happen to notice someone. As long as you don't stare, as long as you don't gawk, as long as you don't take the second glance, that's only a temptation. Whereas a second look, yeah, that's voluntary. Concerning words, for example, jokes or boasting, you also want to confess how many persons were scandalized. In other words, how many people were listening to you, and especially were any children present, because that makes a much worse sin of scandal. Concerning actions, please remember that incomplete actions are still mortally sinful. You must also specify if it was alone or with another. If it was with another, the priest will always presume a person of the opposite sex. If not, it must be specified because that is part of the species of the sin. Also, whether neither one or both were married, because that is what makes the difference between the sin of fornication, two unmarried persons, single adultery, one married, the other unmarried, and double adultery, both married but to different parties. Also, if there was anything unnatural, because that is part of the species of the sin. However, please do not confess unnecessary details. Concerning the virtue of modesty, there are two principles. The first applies to both men and ladies, that we are never allowed to lead others into temptation by the way we dress. The second principle applies to ladies. A lady will want to guard her femininity, and therefore she'll want to dress ladylike and Mary-like. Now, considering the sin of immodesty, we'll simply say that anything that is very tight or very revealing, in other words, provocative, would clearly be sinful. Dear parents, remember also you are responsible for the way your teenagers dress. Concerning dancing, St. Alphonsus, in his Moral Theology, says that dancing by its nature expresses joy, not lust. And that's why certain kinds of dancing normally will be okay. For example, here in America, you've got square dancing and most kinds of folk dancing, where there's only the touching of hands and you don't have the same partner for the whole evening. Normally, that's going to be okay. However, any kind of immodest dancing will clearly be sinful. Concerning music, you look at the lyrics first. If the lyrics are bad, if they promote impurity, drugs, and suicide, you have no business listening to it. Concerning romance novels, and I don't mean Jane Austen and the Bronte sisters, but some of the modern stuff out there nowadays, dear ladies, this can easily be sinful, mortal or venial, depending. I would encourage the moms just to get rid of romance novels. It does not lead anyone to heaven. Even the so-called Christian romances, I don't see how any of that can actually lead anyone to heaven, honestly. My personal opinion. Now, the priest will always try to avoid asking questions about the sixth and ninth commandments. He doesn't want to have to. But he will under two circumstances. One, if it's to make sure of the validity of your sacrament. And then secondly, also, if you're going through temptations, he might ask a question to help you get to be able to fight the temptation. However, on your part as the penitent, if you are ever in doubt whether something is sinful or not for your state of life, that goes whether you are single, dating, engaged, married, widowed, divorced, whatever, always feel free to ask the priest, either in confession or even outside the confessional, because the priest knows God's law and he can discreetly explain to you what you need to know in order to save your soul.